Hi, this is Regina.
And Martin.
And you're listening to Guildcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to this 28th episode of Guildcast. I'm your host Sean, and with me once again is Ruby.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I almost forgot who I was there for a second.
Nice.
As you can tell from the intro there, we have some special guests for this episode.
Yay.
Or if you read the show notes beforehand, that would also give it away. But we have Regina Buenobra and Martin Kirstein, kind of the community team leaders for ArenaNet on the show today. And we have them a little interview we recorded and threw up there, and we already recorded it, so we already know what's going to happen, but we can't spoil it for you. You have to listen
to it.
Yes, we are from the future. We've come back in time for John Connor.
So you have to wear that.
Instead of us sitting here wasting your time by telling more bad jokes and stuff like that, we're just going to go ahead and get into the interview. And then after the interview is done, we're going to read some email and talk more about just crazy stuff that doesn't make any sense.
Awesome. So interview then.
Yeah, enjoy. And we are back with Regina and Martin from the ArenaNet community team. Thanks, you guys, for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, I figured we would talk a little bit about the community. You know, we get so many interviews out there where people just want to know the release date, and they want to know any kind of details they can. But of course, there are only certain things that you can say, and so we want to kind of focus on your specialty, which is community, and talk about how the Guild Wars community has been so far, and even ramping up into Guild Wars 2. So why don't we start this off with a little introduction from both of you. Regina, you want to go first? Just tell us a little bit about what your tasks are, your duties, just to get a feel for what you do at ArenaNet.
Sure. I'm Regina Buenobra. I'm the main community manager serving our English language players. All of us on the community team share in all the different community responsibilities like event management, forums, coordinating with fan sites, and the like. And we're all involved in project management and event planning. I'm also the main event manager at ArenaNet for North American events like the Penny Arcade Expo. So if it happened at PAX and it had something to do with ArenaNet or Guild Wars, no matter how large or small, chances are I had a hand in helping to plan or coordinate it. What people see in public is really just the tip of a big iceberg of responsibilities. All of our projects are undertaken as a team, and everything is really collaborative. But generally, I serve as a point person for internal documentation, like reports on community feedback. And a good example of this is providing the studio with feedback from different communities with regard to major information releases last year. So like the Elementalists, I was there on the forums, collecting quotes and just getting a feel. Like, all of us were getting a feel for what the community was saying about these information releases, but it was generally felt to me to kind of compile everything and into a nice, understandable package.
Cool.
So what to add? I mean, I basically do the same stuff as Regina. I'm coordinating. If it comes to events, if it is something like Gamescom, yeah, then I'm in charge of helping the event team in Europe to organize it, come up with nice community activities. One thing like that often falls under the radar is, so if you've seen something like the War in Crisis stuff that we kicked off, for example, all the viral things that happened, yeah, we were as a community team sitting together with the live team and said, hey guys, so how can we promote this? Like, how can we come up with fun stuff that the community would like? So stuff like this is also things that the community team does. Like Regina said, when you see us on the forums, this is really, it's an integral and important part of our job, but it's really just the tip of the iceberg. We are basically, because we're the public facing, face of the company, And we collect information on the forums. We basically deal with every single department in the company and exchange information with them, talk to them, so that we have a feel for A, what's going on internally, and B, how is the community feeling, and so we can give that back to the developers. So it's a lot of different things we do, which makes the job great because you never just do the same stuff all over again.
You're never bored, are you?
Nope, not really.
Well, now, so you guys spend a lot of time interacting with the community, and I think you're probably the forums are the primary voice of the Guild Wars community. As you guys gear up for Guild Wars 2, what do you think, can you give us kind of an overview of the state of the community at this point?
The community is so we have, let me first say this, we have like an awesome community. So I like, yeah. Especially so it was kind of interesting to see the development. I came on board with Guild Wars 1 after Prophecies was already launched. I came in 2006 just before Factions was about to launch. So I came into an already existing community. This time around with Guild Wars 2, it's very interesting to see the development. Like Guild Wars Guru 2, for example. You've seen, like, before we actually released any information, like the speculation that was on there, and then after every bit of information, when we dropped our first trailer, you saw a huge spike and people just got mental, and then we basically went a little bit dark again, and then, like, this year, before we ramped up for Gamescom, we had this, like, huge amount of information that we pushed out because we needed to have information out there so that people who play the demo actually know what's going on, which means we had to... We had to give a lot of information what's in the demo prior to the demo, which is one of the reasons why we had so much information before Gamescom, and now it's a little bit more quiet, which Eric pretty much explained in his blog post why that's the case. So coming back to the original question, the community is awesome, and they're desperate for information. I can, as a player, and I am a player as well, I played MMOs since, I don't know, for almost 20 years now, maybe? Yeah, something like that. And I can understand that they want every single piece of information, so it's great to see that, because the more desperate they are, it's not like it's fun for us to see that they are desperate, but it tells you that they anticipate the game so much that means it seems like we're doing something right here.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of a lull in terms of activity in the community right now, but it's only because, you know, we were heads down developing the game, and of course the holidays are coming up, so... we know that the Guild Wars 2 community is anxiously waiting for new information. For now, they can relax until we're ready to show them new stuff next year. And, of course, in Guild Wars 1, people are, you know, really working on their Hall of Monuments achievements right now and after the release of the reward calculator. And they're also looking forward to the next content update in Guild Wars Beyond, Kantha, Winds of Change. So...
Yeah, that was actually another thing that was really interesting for us to see and really great for us. So after we launched the Hall of Monuments, we've seen a lot of old players coming back to the game, and we've seen like huge influx of new players who like read all about Guild Wars 2 and say like, hey, I should play Guild Wars 1 now, and so I can actually get stuff for my Hall of Monuments, which was very exciting for us as well.
Yeah, there were a lot of brand new players coming in and quite a few that had dropped the game for a while.
Yeah, and I mean, it's great. It's like, so we see all this, it's, you know, you read the forums, Ruby, you know, it's like there's always this, like, oh my god, Guild Wars is dead. It's like, well, it's far from dead. It's actually very much alive and kicking, so.
You know what? I'm in a guild that's turning people away because it's full, so.
Well, there you go.
It doesn't feel very dead to me.
And the Alliance is full, too, right?
The Alliance, yeah, it's a 10-guild Alliance.
Yeah.
And Massively's guild is turning people away, too, so.
Yeah.
I've never, ever had a problem finding people in that game. It's pretty far from dead.
Yeah, and the Hall of Monuments reward calculator has kind of given people goals to shoot for. We know that in the, you know, prior to that release, people were kind of unsure, you know, should I keep going for these titles? You know, I don't know if what I'm doing is going to net me any benefits in Guild Wars 2, but now that we've given, you know, provided, hey, here's a general idea of what, and concrete things that you can look forward to in Guild Wars 2, it's kind of focused people a little bit more, and I think that's really helped in bringing players in.
It really has. It's been so much fun.
Well, one thing I'm curious about is the kind of the pressure coming with the launch of Guild Wars 2, because that game is consistently in the charts as the most anticipated game of the foreseeable future, mm-hmm. whenever it launches, and I'm curious how you guys deal with that pressure.
Well, it is pressure for sure, because there is a high anticipation, which means yes, you better get it right. So, I mean, one of the reasons why we say when it's ready is because we mean when it's ready, when we feel, hey, this game is in a shape that once we put it out there, people will play it and they will enjoy it. It's not, because you can't just put a half-baked product in the market. It's like, as a player, I don't want to play a half-baked game, and as a company, you don't want to do this as well. There is pressure, but on the other hand, this pressure is like, it's a very good motivator. So I'm actually like really, really excited. From a community point, our real work, I mean, will kick in after the game launched. That's when Regina and I will probably be running around like headless chicken and spend like late nights in the office. So currently it's more of a strategic thing we do as a community team. For us, it's more planning on how we will approach community in Guild Wars 2. What kind of cool stuff we can do. So currently for us, it's actually rather calm, but yeah, it's, as you said, it's pressure, but it's an enjoyable pressure because, hey, I mean, people out there say the product you work on, the game, is the most anticipated MMO in the market. I mean, that makes you proud. That makes you damn proud. So yeah, it is pressure, but it's like, it's a good form of pressure.
Yeah, and the developers and everyone in the company really wants to deliver a high quality product, and we know that the expectations out there are, ArenaNet is, after seeing the demo and the trailers or getting hands-on time at the conventions, they know that the quality bar we're shooting for is very high, and internally we're all very demanding, so there is that pressure, but we do it both for ourselves as well as, for the fans who really want to play the most awesome game they can possibly get their hands on.
Now, in the meantime, while we're working up toward launch and while we're working toward all of this, the ArenaNet blog was something new that you guys introduced to kind of increase communication with the community. Do you feel like that's really meeting? Is this doing what you expected it to do, or is it doing better than what you expected?
Yeah, the ArenaNet blog is definitely exceeding our expectations. I mean, through the blog, we're reaching people far beyond the community forums, which is important in terms of getting the message out there to as many people as possible. Not everyone reads fansite forums, and we're able to reach people beyond the forums and in turn through the Q&A blog posts in which we have our devs respond to community questions. We're showing the community that the developers and others at ArenaNet are reading the forum posts, are reading the blog posts they post, are reading tweets, and while at the same time distributing that message far and wide. So it's a great tool for us as a studio and as a community team.
Yeah, it gives us the opportunity to put out information that you would normally not see on a website. I mean, there is a certain type of information that you put on a website, like there's a new class release, or hey, here is a new Guild Wars novel. So this is stuff you put on your website. But if it's more like, hey, here is our lead designer talking about game design philosophy, that is something that a blog is way more suitable. So it is awesome. I mean, we've been working quite a while to actually get a blog. This is one of the things as well that the community does, going back to the first question. So we were championing for, hey, we need a blog. And so persistency, now we have a blog, and it's just awesome. Also, I want to like give a shout out to David Campbell, which is our writer who is like in charge of the blog in terms of content. So he's an awesome guy. So if you see David out there at one point or a convention, say hi to him.
Yeah, cool. He's done a lot on the blog that's been really, really great to read.
He's a great guy.
I guess speaking of that, going along with that, we also have the social networking outlets, things like Twitter and Facebook. How do you guys feel about those as being a valuable tool? I mean, do you think that that's really kind of a new direction, or do you think it's just like a passing phase?
It's super important for us. One of the things, so there are different studies out there. Normally what the vast majority of your player base never ever goes to any forums. They don't even read your website. It's like you would probably say, I don't know, if we get a high number, 20% of your player base is going to forums. And of those 20%, maybe 10% are really like actually contributing. And of those 10%, probably 1 to 2% are like super active users on forums. So it is an important group, but it is also a small group. While using social network, Facebook and Twitter, it allows you to reach a completely different segment of your player base. So there's a lot of people who use Facebook every day, but they would never go to any game forum. And by basically using Facebook to get the message out to those people, it just enables us to reach out to a way broader audience. So I don't think it's just a passing phase. I think using social media is an integral part of community management.
Yeah, I agree with that. Ignoring social media is a little bit short-sighted because you have conversations taking place on there. Fans are talking about their game, our game. They're interacting with each other on social networks. And, you know, many of the people who we reach on social networks don't read fan site forums at all, so they appreciate that we're participating in the conversation wherever they hang their hat. And I think social networks are changing the online conversation landscape. So for many of our fans, forums are antiquated and intimidating, and it's easier for them to send a tweet at us or converse with other fans on blogs or Facebook than it is to get heavily invested in a forum community. But at the same time, we also want to participate in social media smartly and selectively and not ignore any of those conversations taking place on the forum. So as a company, you know, we're not going to be on every social network, but, you know, we're keeping an eye out on where those conversations are happening.
Yeah. Twitter, for example, is also a great, in kind of a way, it's a great customer support tool in a way. Because if something is wrong with your game, like we scan the Twitter stream, right? So we scan it for keywords, and so we get messages almost in real time. So if something is wrong with your game, and you see all of a sudden there's like 15 people tweeting, oh my god, the server is down, this is way faster than going on a forum and like dig through the threads. We just see, hey, we might have a big issue here, and so we can immediately escalate it, which is another aspect why this stuff is really great.
Yeah, Twitter acts as some ways as like an early warning system, and if you see a couple of tweets on Twitter, you're like, oh, well, there might be some issues with the network. Let me check the forums, and then you see a couple of posts there, and so it kind of like adds another vector to your data. So you're like, okay, maybe there is something to this after all. Maybe it's not just a one-off incident. So let me escalate this to the NOC. You know,
mm-hmm. Being able to react that fast has got to be a huge advantage.
It is. It is. It definitely is.
I imagine also there's a kind of a little personal, satisfaction that a lot of people get from just seeing, you know, if someone responds to their Twitter, their tweet on there, and they see, you know, an RB or an MK at the end, they know, they're like, wow, Regina just talked to me, you know, like directly to me. Do you find that as well?
Yes, it is. I mean, obviously, we would love to react to basically every tweet. It's just not possible because we really don't have the time for it. It's just time constraints. But yeah, definitely, it gives you the conversation is a little, it's more of a one-on-one conversation, which normally isn't that great in terms of distributing information, because then you want to make sure that you reach as many people as possible with a single statement or post or tweet or whatever. But yeah, it definitely adds a personal layer if you just respond to a tweet to an individual.
Mm-hmm. We have heard more than a couple of times that the European Guild Wars community has surpassed the North American Guild Wars community. Is this like in terms of interest or size, and what do you think is behind that?
We have really enthusiastic fans on both sides of the Atlantic. It is true, we have like a really big community in Europe, and obviously the European market is super important for us. It's one of the biggest growing MMO markets in the world. So you can see like Germany is pretty big in terms of people playing MMOs. France is actually the fastest growing than Poland. So it's super important for us. And it seems like, yeah, people in Europe, they just love Guild Wars. I mean, if you would have been at Gamescom, it's just the amount of, I mean, you've seen the videos, Ruby, so you've seen how packed our booth was and like how how enthusiastic people were by playing the demo, watching the presentation. So we always get a lot of love when we go to Europe, and it's equal when we go to expos like Penny Arcade or when we were in New York at New York City Comic Con. In New York, we had people waiting for 4 hours just to play the demo, and I mean that's dedication, right? So Regina and I actually had to get to the bar and get them water so that they don't like dehydrate in the line.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing, like the response from our East Coast fans. Some people drove up like 5 or 6 hours just to be there, you know, just for that one evening. You know, we weren't even on the show floor and they're like, "Oh, I just want to see Guild Wars 2."
Yeah. So it's not about which community is bigger. It's like we are blessed with having huge support on both sides of the Atlantic. So it's not a competition in any form. It's just like we love every individual fan we have out there.
One thing I'm curious about, like at this current time, what would you say is the biggest, the hottest topic in the forums right now? And is there anything you can say about that?
Should we say except launch date?
Yeah, except launch date.
The conversation about potions was pretty hot. Mm-hmm. After that interview with Izzy and John on Kill 10 Rats. I feel like the conversation has kind of come full circle after the clarifications on there, and people are starting just to debate points that they've already talked about. The other kind of hot topic, which I don't think is necessarily a topic, is ArenaNet's going dark for a little while again. Yeah. For the holidays and after the busy trade show season.
Yeah, and Guild Wars 1, there's people are talking about the Dervish update.
The Dervish update.
And Winds of Change is a topic that gets discussed as well, like what the live team wants to do with Guild Wars 1 in the future. So I can just say, John Stummy, lead designer on Guild Wars 1, he has a lot of super cool ideas. We only talked about a few of them, but I am very excited to see, as well as I'm excited about to see what's happening with Guild Wars 2 next year, I'm excited about to see what's happening with Guild Wars next year as well. So I think we have a lot of cool stuff coming in the pipeline, and it will be a great year for Guild Wars and Guild Wars 2.
Awesome.
Cool. That's always good to hear. I know that, you know, the forums, even though you don't really have official forums, you know, the guru forums and everything, they're always a hot, you know, debate area, I guess you could say, and they're so busy and so active that I think that's a good, you know, a good thing going between Guild Wars 1 and Guild Wars 2. So I'm sure that keeps you guys busy. I'm sure that's kind of, I don't know if I would say that's your main use of time. Would that be accurate?
It is. It takes up, Regina can pitch in on it as well, obviously, because she's taken more care of the English forums than I do. It takes up a good chunk of our time, but I wouldn't say it's like, the majority. It's not like it takes up like 3/3 of our work days. Because with experience, you get pretty good in scanning stuff and digesting the vital information out of it. So it's a learning process as well.
Yeah, I think we spend a healthy amount of time on the forums, but like Martin said, it's over time it becomes easier to digest a lot of information in a short amount of time, and I'm always pretty connected with people on an individual basis, so if there's an issue on the forums and they're like, "Oh, Regina needs to know about this," they'll contact me, which is awesome, because you know, I'll know about an issue vaguely and I'll understand that something's going on, and then having someone sort of reemphasize, "Hey, this is important," by just pinging me on IM or a personal message is really great, because we have, you know, community members who care about, you know, the particular issues that they're interested in. So, yeah, I'd say forums are a big part of our job, but there's so much planning and other responsibilities that it's not like, doesn't take up like 90% of our time.
And one thing I would like to add for those people listening now, I know I've said it on the forums in the past, but I just want to reiterate, if you guys don't see us posting, trust us, we're still there, we're reading, and it's not just us, like, all our designers read the forums as well when they have time. It's just sometimes we can't really, either we can't answer something or we just don't have the time at the moment. So, but rest assured, whenever we are there. We're reading. We read everything. It's just like we might not post everywhere.
We see all.
Yeah, we see you.
So watch it.
Yeah, wow. Well, cool. So, again, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Every time.
Cool.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks a lot, Sean and Ruby.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having
us
here.
Well, I don't know. What do you think? You think that was a good interview?
I thought that was odd. That was like the shortest interview ever. It's been like 10 seconds. No, seriously, it was such a good interview. It was great of them to come on and take their time to do this because I know they're pretty busy, but...
Yeah, and today was Martin's day off, so he actually was recording that on his day off. I mean,
thank you, Martin.
That's dedication.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know, I think he said there were some other reasons he had to come in anyway, but we're going to pretend that he just came in for us.
Yeah, we'll just, it's totally for us. Well, so that was cool of them to join us on the show. You know, we've kind of wanted to get them on for a while, and it's one of those things where it's like, hey, why don't we... try now, and you know it's a good time. I think to just there's no real big news, and as far as the development of the game is concerned. So we wanted to just talk about community and concentrate on that whole side of things, because a lot of times people as we mentioned in the thing, a lot of times people just want to focus on release date and all these solid figures, and everybody wants like what can you tell us new. Well. Sure, I mean, I want that too, but it's. I think it's nice just to be able to sit down and talk about community sometimes. So,
we forgot to ask about the Mesmer reveal.
Oh,
right,
realized,
because they totally would have told us.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to do that next time.
You know what? They were probably had like a whole bunch of papers in front of them, all the stuff about the Mesmer reveal to tell us, and we're just waiting for us to ask, and we didn't do it.
At the top, it says, "If Sean asks,
only
tell him
if
this."
If Sean asks.
Yes, and it was all this. Yeah. Oh well, we'll have to. Yeah, we'll have to wait till next time.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess we also, we wanted to read a few emails before we end this show, and we have quite a few. So this first one is from Flower Lissa, and it says, "Hey, about your European listener who wants to join a guild like MVOP, there's another option: GW Online, GuildWars.InkGamers.com." That's the guild. It says Guild Wars Guru each have a guild recruitment forum, and the procedure is rather simple. You post your requirements and gameplay style, and guilds will answer you. You can browse through their own looking for member post. Most of them have one or web page, and decide which one is a good fit. If you're still hesitating, you can always ask them to play with them through a few missions and see how it goes. Posting on those forums is how I found D2, which is the guild I belong to in the same alliance as MVOP. And that's from Flower Lissa. And at the end, she says, "P.S. Roundtable show? Count me in. Not for PvP, though. At this point, there's no particular subject I'd like to address, but I'll think about it and send you another email when I think of something." Actually, that's a good... the GW Online, that is the alliance, right?
Yeah, that's our... they host our forums, and it's the Guild Wars Online Alliance.
Yeah.
And they've got, I'll actually put that in the show notes. They've all got their forums and everything, and you can kind of look around and see what's a good fit. The Alliance has a pretty hefty percentage of Europeans, so they're playing at all time zones. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that Lissa would be so awesome to have on the show. She's so cool.
Well, that would be cool. Actually, let me address that, because, we mentioned that last time. I think we've mentioned it times before, but for the roundtable show, this is our plan. We want to get the first week of every month, basically the first episode of every month, we're going to have this roundtable show, if things go right. I mean, it's a lot of coordination to get this stuff going, so it might not always happen like that. But for the first one, we want to do the first week in January, so I think the first week that we would record in January would be the 7th. So we want to get guys and girls from Relics of Ore, Ryan and Tiger Feet and all them, and get them on the show. And we haven't picked a topic yet. but I have quite a few written down that I want to go through. I'm going to ask Ryan what he thinks about a few of these. And so that should be a good show. I mean, and then each time after that, you know, each month when we do these roundtable shows, we're going to have different people. So we will definitely be able to get, you know, we'll be able to get Lissa on there. We'll be able to get a few other people who have been emailing and asking about it and saying they're interested. I think it'll be a lot of fun. What we'll probably do is mention the topic beforehand, like on Twitter or something like that, and then that way you can say, like if we say we're going to debate a PvP topic, then you know, if you're a PvP person, then you can come on and debate that. We're not just going to pick people and then be like, okay, now the topic is this, because I mean, we might do that sometimes, maybe. That might be actually kind of fun, kind of like a impromptu topic thing, but...
I'd get a kick out of that.
On the spot.
Just because It would be insane enough and hectic enough to be a lot of fun.
It'd be like one of those shows on like Fox News or something when they throw out topics and they all debate about it and yell at each other and no, nothing like that.
If we do that, we have to do a video podcast so we can see everybody making faces.
That's true, yeah. That would be not fun. So the roundtables are coming. Relics of War guys are going to be in the first one. So you can look forward to that. It should be a lot of fun. Okay, so for this next one, it says, hello there. Two things from the last podcast. I agree that the men's wedding attire was a big letdown. I would have liked one tux with a long back and one short, and why wasn't there a kilt? My Ellie would love to show off his well-shaped legs, but he's not allowed to wear Paragon armor. As for five gods and six core professions, our guild solved that conundrum. It's one god for each profession except the Ellie, since they are already demigods.
Yes.
Hey, that's like a Tolkien thing there, talking about all that. Anyway, the next two things are a bit personal. Feel free to ignore. Uh-oh, maybe I should have read this first. You get a lot of people asking for help, and I want to provide some. So if anyone out there needs help, just whisper me in-game. I'm mostly available during European daytime. And for last, even though Miku has the brains of a rabid Wolverine, I finished all Kirin missions without having to restart. Oh.
Are those like in her backpack?
Regards, Felidon Windlore.
Well, I had to restart lots, so I guess I have the brains of a rabid Wolverine, too.
Well, I already knew that. I could have said that.
I keep him in my purse.
I think that's a good point about the kilt. That could have definitely been an option.
It would have, but I remember... Kristen Perry was talking something. She was talking about creating some of these costumes, and she said they didn't. Some of it was a problem because they didn't have. She called it the bones of certain skirts for certain professions. So I guess if you don't have that kilt outline already for all the male professions, maybe it won't work. I was thinking about that because there's nothing resembling a kilt. For like the male Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could probably work with it with a warrior or maybe even a paragon. Maybe a dervish. I don't know if you can shorten them. But she said that a lot of times the underlying structure was not there.
Oh, okay.
So maybe that's why. I would have, and don't get me wrong, I would have loved to see a kilt. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking just the way Kristen Perry was talking, maybe it just couldn't be done. Mm-hmm. I still would have liked from Texas.
Maybe in Guild Wars 2, right?
There will be kilts in Guild Wars 2.
Oh, you heard it here first.
Ah!
Ruby says...
quit it!
Okay, well, this next email, this actually is a comment from Ryan over at Relics of War, and he has a little thing to add about that. And he says, men are a second thought in regards to marriage in all ways. Every man that's had a wedding knows this. Marriages are for everyone, but the weddings that lead to them, just women. We're props. That's it. Wow. Do you have anything to add to that?
I think maybe Ryan needed, you know, to take more of a front seat at his wedding. Poor Ryan. I don't know. I'm just sitting here thinking. I gave my husband, he had one job. Just one job. That's all I had to do. And I remember seeing the tuxes that he picked out, and I called him crying from the bridal store and asked him, what were you thinking?
Oh, so no. You were Bridezilla, weren't you?
I
you don't even know how to answer that.
answer that.
I just joked. I don't think so. Just they were just really bad tuxes. Now I kind of see what he's saying. It is, you know, the guy doesn't get the giant white dress, and if you go into a bridal store, there's a little tux corner among the 10 square miles of wedding gowns and accessories.
That's all right. We don't mind, because we just want to get out of there as fast as possible.
So there you go.
Okay, this next one is from Optimus Maleficus. Maleficus.
Hey, now who's joking?
Says, hey, Sean and Ruby, I'm a longtime Guild Wars player, but a new listener to the podcast. I played a lot back in 2005 and 2006, in the days when an account could only have 4 character slots. You had to earn refund points, and the Superior Vigor rune cost over 100k in the player market. Oh, I remember those days.
Back in the day.
Now, after a long hiatus when I was in college, I'm sitting on 31 Hall of Monuments points, and I'm helping my girlfriend get her first character through Prophecies. It's good to be back. Now that I'm aware of the podcast, I'm grateful for the thoughtful and, most importantly, positive outlook on Guild Wars happenings and Guild Wars 2 news that you guys bring. Here's to reaching 100 episodes and beyond. Wow, 100 episodes.
I will toast to that.
I had a few ideas regarding profession speculation that I would like to throw into the fray. First, in the concept art of a human necromancer available on GuildWars2.com, and then he's got the link to it that we can put. And it's essentially the necromancer profession page on GuildWars2.com. He says, I noticed that his hood looked an awful lot like a dervish hood. Perhaps the Reaper aspects of the dervish class will be reflected in the necro's new looks and skills. What I really have in mind is a scythe-wielding necromancer. I would have loved that in Guild Wars. But I know scythes are not one of the Guild Wars 2 weapons. Maybe something to hope for in an expansion. My next point is a response to the ideas about a scientist or engineer similar to Team Fortress 2's engineer as one of the new professions. When I first heard the idea, my mind immediately went to the ritualist, whose spirit spam skills always struck me as being very similar to the automated sentry guns and AoE defenses found in other games. These kinds of abilities are not explicitly referenced in any of the announced professions, so I think it's likely we will see the ritualists communing and channeling magic return in Guild Wars 2, but maybe they will be mechanical rather than spirit-based. Lastly, while we know there's no dedicated healing class, I'm certain we will see a holy class in Guild Wars 2. People keep saying paladin, but a melee-focused class with heavy armor seems too redundant with the warrior. So, I have a different idea. Playing off of the fact that the monk's dance emote is Tai Chi, perhaps the Guild Wars 2 monk will become a martial arts class focused on acrobatics, since we will be able to jump and smiting. Thanks for reading. I hope my ideas make for a good discussion. Regards, Optimus Maleficus. P.S. SS Necros rule.
Thank you.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's kind of mixing the ritualist with the engineer thing, kind of update, you know, an updated modern version of the ritualist. I do see that as... actually, I think we did talk about that a little bit. I've always loved the stationary pet mechanic classes, you know, in Warhammer... It's the engineer, and I think that's what kind of sparked that whole idea. You know, they set up these little turrets, and they shoot, you know, because of the time period that Warhammer takes place, they can do that. Well, Guild Wars 2, will, you know, it moves you 250 years forward, so you have guns, and you have those types of things. You have more of a mechanical, you know, atmosphere around you, and I think that would definitely be a possibility. And that's why that's essentially why we speculate on that. I mean, it would be great to see that. A lot of games do have that. Actually, that's a really popular time period now. You know, you look at Fable 3. I always talk about Fable 3. It's set in that type of period. Warhammer, like I said, even World of Warcraft is doing that. You know, they have the guns. They have more of a, you know, the gnomes, and even now the goblins are more into, like, this whole kind of a steampunky mechanical thing, you know, and I really love it. So I would think that they're going to do that as well with the with something in Guild Wars 2. I know the Char are kind of leaning that way,
you know,
a little bit.
As soon as we saw the Char, when we were introduced to the Char last year, the word steampunk was popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
So they're really that engineering and technology race. And I'm like second guessing myself because somebody's going to pick on my phrasing, I know.
Ruby said that there will be a char engineer.
You know what? There's no jumping in Guild Wars 2. Let me just get myself all the way in.
Oh, man. There you go. Well, it was nice knowing Ruby.
Yes. Now there are people knocking on my door. I think there's a torch and a pitchfork.
Well, so what do you think about this? I mean, we've talked about the engineer before, but do you think that it's possible to kind of evolve from the ritualist?
I can kind of see that. My thought is still, and see now he's this whole thing with the dervish being folded in as part of the necro. I've really been leaning toward the writ being merged into the necro for Guild Wars 2. So this has kind of taken me on a new little train of thought, and I'm not too sure how far down that path I'm willing to go. I can absolutely see a tech class in there, just because it's such a big part of it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine where it would be though. So I don't know. And I'll tell you the other thing I kind of got stuck on when he said TF2's engineer. You kind of lost me for a couple minutes because I was, you know how they have the little catchphrases that they say that we saw like in the demo videos?
Mm-hmm.
My brain was putting the TF2 catchphrases in there.
Oh.
That was a good time. So.
Yeah.
I went there for a couple minutes. Completely useless, but it was funny. I'm still leaning toward the writ stuff heading in the direction of necro if it goes anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I just think that if there's a mix of dervish and necro, I mean, sure, it would be cool from kind of a, you know, reaper point of view, you know, the dealing with death and the scythe and all that. But at the same time, I think that novelty of that would be limited. You know, I think that it would be cool for a second, and then it would be like, okay. Now what? I just think that the necro is so much deeper than that, than like swinging a scythe around. And when you look at the dervish, you know, what they do is completely different, you know, with the avatars and everything. So I don't know. I think that mixing the two would be just a really, like, they would really have to rework so much because they're kind of so far apart. Whereas, you know, the ritualist, you can see where the minions and the spirits, you know, working together would definitely work.
It would fit in really nicely. Yeah. Now, I do have to say, though, his idea of the monk in Guild Wars 2 appeals to me so, so much.
Oh, yeah.
I love this, and I would absolutely love to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would, too.
That would be melee.
That would be the one thing, huh?
It really would, because I just think that would be such a fun class to play. I really, really hope to see something like that.
Yeah. Well, cool. Let's go to this next email. Wow, I'm getting into the ones that were only written yesterday.
Nice.
That's a good sign. Hello, Guildcasters. Having listened to all of the coverage of Guild Wars 2 and everything that we've been told about the game, I've come to at least one conclusion. If there's one thing that Guild Wars 2 is not, it would be Guild Wars. Amen. Certainly the upcoming game is worthy of the name Guild Wars because it is enshrouded in the same lore, land, races, and many of the same classes as the first game. However, the gameplay itself appears to be about 20% consistent with the original and 80% new and different. While the game still seems to focus on skills and has a limited skill bar in comparison to other games, the combat style appears to be moving more toward a console style of play, incorporating more character control and dexterity than what is common for a fantasy MMO. While the personal story seems heavily instanced, the majority of the game appears to be more persistent. Henchmen and heroes are gone, there will be random group events, acquiring tasks appears to be more of a function of being in the right place or talking to the right person instead of following task indicators, and the list goes on. I'm not saying this is either good or bad, I'm just pointing out that while it may have been implied, no one has come right out and said that Guild Wars 2 is a very different game than the original Guild Wars. When Guild Wars 2 was announced, I think the expectation was that it was basically going to be Guild Wars, but with new stories, a new landscape, and advancements in gameplay, such as improved graphics and the ability to swim and jump. Players who had that mindset might not find the final version of the sequel to their liking, especially if they were drawn to Guild Wars because of what set it apart from other MMOs. On the other hand, people who criticize Guild Wars for some of its differences might find Guild Wars 2 to be more of what they expect in an MMO. It's going to be interesting to see how the game is perceived by the Guild Wars community when it's finally released. Terrence. I think Terrence, you're absolutely right, except I wouldn't agree that people didn't realize this before, because I think they were saying that from the beginning, or at least I think what you're saying is it wasn't announced this way, that no one's come right out and said that it's a very different game. I think they actually have. I mean, I think from the beginning they were like, you know, we realize that there's only so much we can do with Guild Wars, so we want to completely, you know, make a new platform to launch a sequel, and we want to do it with, you know, not only swimming and jumping and, you know, an auction house or whatever else that they can't do in Guild Wars 1, but it's just going to be so much more. I mean, 250 years in the future, that's a big jump. You know, if you think about 250 years ago in real-world time from now, I mean, you know, we didn't have half of this stuff. So I think it's... I don't think that they ever didn't say that. I think that it's more a case of the perception. You know, a lot of things have been said, but I think still players are like, well, you know, I know that it's still going to be connected to the Hall of Monuments, and I know that this is going to be the same, and, you know, a lot of the characters, you know, like Gwen, and, you know, they're going to be the same. So I think people are kind of holding on to that, I think, is what I'm trying to say. What do you think?
To hang on to that familiar.
Yeah.
And I think we'll have enough of the familiar to make us happy, mm-hmm. and to make the world, well, to make the world the one that we know. And I think that's because of the ground that ArenaNet is laying now with Guild Wars Beyond. Mm-hmm. So I don't think people expect to go in there and see the Tyria that we know today just with better graphics and jumping. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to be unpleasantly surprised. But when I played in Seattle, and it was familiar enough. It was Tyria. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't that big disconnect.
It's such a hard balance, I think, that they have to do between the people who want to see Tyria as they've known to love it, and the people who have no idea what Tyria is, and they just know that there's this new game coming out that's supposed to be really awesome, and they want to try it. You know, because there are a lot of people completely turned off by Guild Wars because of the fact that it's a cooperative multiplayer online game. It's not, you know, a true MMO by the standards of persistence and all that. So a lot of... What's that?
So you're missing out.
Yeah, so a lot of people are really turned off by that, and now that it's going to be like that, it's going to be more traditional, they say, hey, I think I'm going to check this out, but a lot of them are worried that they maybe have to go through and play Guild Wars 1 to be able to understand what's going on, and, you know, of course, that's the balance, you know, ArenaNet kind of attracting those people and saying, no, you don't really have to play through Guild Wars 1, but it would be nice, I mean, you would get it more. So I think that they're not coming out and saying it will be one way or the other for sure. You know, they're not saying this will be exactly like Guild Wars, or they're not saying this will be nothing like Guild Wars, because they want to attract both of those crowds.
Right. But I think there's a good enough balance from what very... I mean, I've seen a very, very, very limited piece of Guild Wars 2, but I think the balance is there to attract both sides of that fence.
Yeah, and that's a hard balance.
Yeah, it is. It's a very difficult balance. I don't think they need to worry, though. I don't see either one of those player groups being shut out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's hope not, at least. Because I am interested. I mean, it's going to be... this is what I am foreseeing on the launch of Guild Wars 2. You know, we're going to have a lot of old friends. It's going to be like every holiday when all the old friends come back to AFK... you know, the Nine Rings and stuff like that. Yeah, and it'll be like that. You know, we're going to see a lot of people we haven't seen in a while. It's just going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be exciting. It's going to be like some kind of reunion. But at the same time, we're going to have a lot of people who... we're almost going to be like the sages. We're going to be like sitting back, and everyone's going to be like, whoa, this storyline is excellent, you know, with the Gwen thing and all this. And we're like, yes. And then we pat their heads, and we're like, yes, yes, we know.
We were there back in the day.
Back in the day, Gwen was this tall, and we knew her ever since she was that tall.
I remember when this was all not seared.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be kind of exciting, I think, for me as an old man.
You'll be wise and old and semi-respected.
Semi by myself. So
so let's get off your lawn.
Yes, I can. Well, yeah, definitely. So this next email, this is from, this is a funny one. It says, "Yo guys, it's Boom Ha Ha You're Dead from the Kiss Alliance again. Before I make my main point, I just want to say I love Ruby's reaction to my last email. In case you don't quite remember, it was the one involving a lot of, okay, now I know you're making this up. I sent the email to Ruby as well this time, so everyone knows my awesomeness is for real." Wait, I thought that was my awesomeness.
Sean, did you do this? You sent me.
Now, what I wanted to ask about the hard mode system for Guild Wars 2, it could be interesting, what with the instanced environment and all. ArenaNet has mentioned it, hasn't mentioned it yet, to my knowledge at least, and removing something so essential to the game as a second level of difficulty is unthinkable. Would it be similar to world system, like they have a set of normal mode worlds and a set of hard mode worlds? If you've heard anything about this, please share. And if you haven't, and I know I don't really need to tell you this, feel free to speculate. Still a fan. Boom, ha ha, you're dead.
All right, I believe you're real. So this is actually kind of a fun thing to speculate. I can't imagine how they would do hard mode in a persistent world. The only thing I can think of is that they'd, like, make your armor disappear.
Oh.
That would be
nude mode, I think. I think they have that in Age of Conan, actually.
The entirety of Age of Conan is nude mode. Maybe you get, like, a potato sack or something. Your armor's replaced by a potato sack, and that's hard mode.
I think what it is if you're in our guild and you play with Ruby, that's automatically hard mode.
Shut up! Hate you.
It is interesting to think about because there are different ways you can do it. You know, there's different ways, and if it's persistent, then how will you make it specific to you? You know, that's what he's saying. But there will also be the instance parts, you know, in your personal storyline. So I don't know. Maybe they'll just do it in that part.
I think we've been just laughing too much because I keep going to absurd places. Like you go to your home instance and you're locked out of your house, and that's hard mode. You forgot your keys.
Can't find your keys.
There's Grawl coming down the street. They're ticked off. No, but you know, hard mode, I love hard mode. I mean, I'm with him. Adding that second level of difficulty made it so good. But if you can't change the world, and you really can't in a persistent setting, you have to change the player. Is the technology there to change the player's stats like that and make it more difficult for them than for the other people in the world?
Oh, definitely. And you know what else? I've run into some games. Actually, I was just playing this today, and I was thinking about this exact thing. In World of Warcraft, I was playing through the Goblin Zone. Don't hate me because I play World of Warcraft, please. I was playing through the Goblin Beginning Zone, and they have this thing where, you know, you have to blow up this... I don't think I'm giving anything away here, but you have to blow up this house, and certain stages of it happen to where you're getting the people out of the house or the people evacuate. So while the people evacuated for you, for everyone else running around you, they haven't evacuated, so they're still inside the house. When you blow up the house, it doesn't just blow up and then go back to the way it was. You know, it actually blows up and it stays blown up, but not for the other people running around. I mean, you can literally see other people running around, and those people are seeing a different world than you're seeing. And I think that's interesting. It's actually like that in a upcoming game called ArcAge, too. And I just think that technology is there, you know, where you can almost make persistent instances. And that's a term I just made up.
Let's go
ahead and copyright that. Yeah, persistent instances. I'll say it again so that you can spell it right on the copyright forms. but you know what I mean? It's like your own thing, but you don't have to go into a zone and wait for a loading screen. I think we're just at that point in technology when those things are available. So hopefully that's how they're going to do it.
You know, now that you say that, I remember ArenaNet was talking about mining nodes and how... Mm-hmm. Once you've mined it, it'll look different for you than it will for the people who haven't mined it. So, yeah, I guess they are there.
Yeah. Well, even one of my favorite games, Fallen Earth, they have this thing where you, when you walk through doors, even if the door isn't closed, you know, it's a walkway, you walk into that walkway and you're in an instance that's specific to you. And it's a little bit different than the Warcraft thing because you don't actually see people who aren't in your group there. So it's, you know, it's an instance in the true sense of it where you only see the people in your group. But if there's no zoning, there's no loading times. You basically walk through the doorway and then you're in an instance, you walk out and you're out of the instance. And there's, you know, it's really, really seamless. So that's just another example, I think, of how they can do this type of thing. So hopefully they'll use that. Okay, so let's go to this. This is the last email, actually. Wow, I can't believe it. It says, "Hi, guys. Wanted to send you a quick note on my thoughts on energy potions. I actually like the idea since this seems to be an attempt to move the focus of energy management. If you're an uber elite player with magic fingers, then you may not touch a potion during a fight, which saves you gold and the annoyance of popping a potion. Now, if you're a casual, dare I say, lazy gamer like me, you'll be hitting the potions all the time. Is there something wrong with that? No. The hardcore player who right now are running around the underworld or doing high-end PvP get rewarded for being good. Everyone else loses some gold, which means it'll just take longer to buy that shiny whatever they had their eyes on. So energy potions are how they balance the casual gamers with the hardcore ones. A very elegant solution, in my opinion." And that's from Flipside, who has been a listener for a long, long time. So what do you think about this?
You know, I try so hard to stay out of the whole potion argument because people are so passionate about it right now. This sounds so awful to say. It just does not seem like such a huge deal to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm kind of with Flipside. If you have to use a lot of potions or you don't, okay. So
yeah, and they've already said that they drop and that they'll probably be available, you know, to buy within game gold. And I mean, probably, I don't know. They've talked about like that karma system and everything. I mean, who knows how we're going to be able to get these potions? And they might be pretty easy to get, so it wouldn't even be a big deal.
You know, and I will go so far to say that I'm sure you'll be able to buy them within game gold, just because ArenaNet has said something before about going to the merchant and restocking on potions.
Yeah.
So it just does not, I mean, I know it's a huge, huge argument right now. It just doesn't seem like that big of a deal to me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like I should get all worked up about it and I can't.
See, this is one of those things, if we already started our roundtable thing, we could get people on and talk about that.
Dude, I would have gone to McDonald's by now and just let everybody yell.
I mean, I'm really excited to hear, like, I guess segueing here a little bit, to hear a lot of the opinions that we'll have on these roundtable shows, because I tend to see both sides of a lot of things, you know, and I'll be like, tell me why you feel so passionately about this. So.
And then we'll talk about Guild Wars.
Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah, I think essentially, like he's saying, I wouldn't call casual gamers lazy gamers, though, because I definitely consider myself a casual ADD gamer. I'm not casual overall. You know, I play a lot of games. I just don't get to the end game in any of them. You know what I mean? So it has nothing to do with how much of a gamer I am overall. It has to do with how much of a gamer I am specifically in 10 different games. You know what I mean? Like, in each game, I'm a casual gamer. But overall, I would definitely not call myself a casual gamer. So I think there are a lot of people out there like that who just, especially, you know, with all the MMOs out there, they just want to try different things. I mean, most people have at least tried World of Warcraft, you know, and either they've played it to max level or they, you know, they played it a little bit here and there, like myself. And, you know, so in that game, I would definitely be considered a noob, Care Bear, or whatever. But overall, you know, because I literally, this is sad, but very true, I will literally have another game in another monitor, and I'll be playing two MMOs at once, because I'm just crazy like that. I don't know what my deal is.
You're ADD.
Yeah. I'll set up a crafting queue in one game, and then I'll play another one and do a quest, and then I'll go back and fix the crafting queue, and it's...
Oh, well, that's not so bad. It's not like you've got your right hand on one mouse and your left hand on another mouse, and you're, you know,
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you totally...
What about that? Yeah. Okay, well, I guess that's all the email we had, and pretty much that's our show. But next week, let's see, what is next week? Next week is... Oh, I will be gone, actually, next week.
What is today, the 10th? Oh, you're leaving on the 17th.
Yeah, next week I will be gone, so we will not be recording a show. And then the week after that will be Christmas Eve, which, I mean, I'll be home. I don't know, Ruby, you probably have, like, family stuff, or, I mean...
Actually, you know what? I'm going to be home Christmas Eve.
Oh, okay. So there might be a possibility we'll have a Christmas show. We'll see, yeah. And then after that is New Year's Eve, which, I mean, Ruby will be out partying and, you know...
I'm such a party animal.
Getting drunk all over the place, yeah, so...
It's shameful, really. Look for me on the news.
So, I mean, it's I guess it's up in the air. Next week we definitely won't have one, though, but it's up in the air for Christmas Eve and New Year's. But then after that will be the roundtable one.
Yay.
Around the 7th or 8th of January. So that should be a good time. But we hope, you know, this one, we want to make it extra special to kind of tide you over for the next 2 weeks. So,
so you can listen to this every Friday or Saturday,
yes.
Whatever.
Yes, exactly. So I guess next week would be a good time for a Mesmer reveal, wouldn't you say?
Well, as soon as you leave town, I imagine there will be.
Yeah, exactly. I think next Friday, I'm calling it right now. So I'm calling that Mesmer reveal.
Wait, when exactly do you leave? Are you leaving early Friday or late Thursday?
Early Friday.
Oh, okay. Okay, we could say Friday morning.
Okay. So. We'll have a pool, a betting pool on that.
I'm leaning toward Thursday night is why I asked. We'll see.
We still wouldn't be able to record in time, I think. But
yeah.
Maybe I'll just record a show and just be like, oh, my God, Mesmer, and then that'll be it. That'll be the entire show.
Such a great show.
I actually would do that. I would be like, hi, welcome to episode 29, oh, my God, Mesmer, and then and then collapse.
And then that's the whole, and Sean's drooling on the floor now.
Yeah, good times. Okay, well, if you have an email for us that you would like to send and ask us a question or comment or anything like that, you can send it to Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at guildcast.com. Also, Ruby, R-U-B-I, at guildcast.com. You can also check out our Twitter and Facebook pages. And like we mentioned, you definitely want to check us out on Twitter and follow us on Twitter if you are interested in the roundtable thing. Because, you know, we'll post up a little thing about... the topics we want to cover, you know, right around the end of each month, we'll start doing that. And so you can look around and see, and maybe the third week, so we can have like a week to plan it, I guess. But so, you know, get those topics out for the roundtables and try to get as many people on as possible. Not like 100 people, but a handful.
Oh.
So, yeah, follow us there. And then there's also guildcast.com or guildcast.wordpress.com. where you can check out the show notes and links to, you know, some of the things we've talked about in each show. And it's all right there. Plus, all of the old shows we've done in this revamped Guildcast, plus the old archives. I mean, I actually have all of the old episodes from the very first Guildcast in November of 2005 all the way till now, which you don't want to listen to those. They're really bad. they're really bad.
What? No, they were awesome.
So, yeah, I guess that's it from us until probably around Christmas time. So until whenever we record next, this is Sean.
I'm Ruby.
And we'll talk to you then.
The magic of editing.